This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 36, live from Millfield. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, I'd make the journey to Millfield to talk to Mark Garraway live and in person. But joining us, as always, on the line is Lavers. He has to go before the end of the show, so don't worry, we're not ignoring him. And we also have time to answer your questions about fast bowling flexibility and rhythm and how to bowl with a 15-degree elbow flex and no more. Is it possible? Find out on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching and playing better cricket, no matter where you are in the world and no matter who you are in the world. My name's David Hinchliffe, and you can probably tell by the difference in the audio already that there's a slight difference to this week's podcast, and that is because I have travelled the many, many miles to Millfield School to join live, for the first time ever, I think, Mark Garraway, the Director of Cricket Coaching here. Hello, Garris.
Hello, across the table.
That's right, yeah, eye to eye at last. But of course, as always, on the line is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, very good. It's very unusual to be looking out onto a cricket field and also onto the face of Mark Garraway, what I normally just see as an outline of a Skype call. But hopefully it should be a good show this week. What have you been up to, Lavers?
We've just been planning winter things, which are all organised now, so we know exactly what we're going. The boys have got another 10 days or so, another 2 weeks off, and then we'll be starting at the beginning of October, so that's all planned. And then just doing some final tying up of club cricket season. So we've just analysed where we feel we've done very well, where we feel we need to improve. And we've just been going through the process of working out how we feel we can improve that. So we've looked at where current players can make improvements, where we can bring players into certain positions if we feel that's an opportunity. Just analysing the season, looking at where we've what our strengths and weaknesses have been, and trying to prepare for next season and just try and get ahead of the game a little bit.
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because that's one of the things that I was thinking about this week regarding club cricket and non-professional cricket, let's say, cricket played by amateurs. And in particular, I was thinking about how, certainly at my club, there's a wide range of different expectations, and there's not really a settled culture at the club of what to expect from cricket. Some people are doing it just for something to do on a Saturday afternoon and enjoy their game of cricket, and other people are looking to improve their game and develop. And from a coach's point of view, I'm interested in getting both of your ideas on how you deal with those varying expectations and how you build a culture when those things are so different. So, Gareth, have you ever been in that situation, and what have you done if you have?
Well, I think we're very much in that situation in the environment, probably, that both Sam and myself work in as well, because we talk a lot about the players that are doing some great things in the first 11s and who are representing their counties and England and various other countries around the world when they're not here. But equally, part of our roles here at our schools is also to develop the people that play in the Bs and Cs and Ds. And in fact, as a school, we put a lot of emphasis into training and helping those guys develop as well over the course of the last couple of years, with some brilliant impact. So one of our young lads has just made his debut for Hong Kong under 19s, and he started in our D11 when he first came into Millfield School. And his expectations at the beginning of that journey were very low. He just wanted to have fun. He wanted to learn how to hit the ball a little bit further, so that would represent some fun to him. He couldn't catch to save his life, so that was one of his goals. But he knew that he had a good throwing arm, and he thought that he could turn that into a decent bowling arm as well. And over the years, his expectations rose. But they started very small, and it would have been wrong to put too bigger expectations on him. And also, it would have been wrong to say, well, you're only in the D side, so you actually don't really matter. So I think fun has got to be the starting point. I think everybody's fun is increased if they learn something new that helps them to play the game a little bit better. And I think work is something that can also go alongside that fun as well. So if you can encourage somebody to come to a net twice a month instead of once a month, then you're increasing that workload and that opportunity. And I think opportunity is the biggest word that I can say about any environment, is that you provide that. And if people then choose to take it, then the culture will grow. So three words for me: fun, which has got to be the starting point. Secondly, putting some work in behind it. And thirdly, creating extra opportunities for people to work on their game, whatever that may be.
And that's a great starting point. And I want to develop the point of the culture side of it with you, Labors, and ask when people have, maybe perhaps in the same team, but they have different expectations. And some people, perhaps you can sit down and have more formal conversations with them, and other people are less interested in that side of thing. How do you deal with that variety of expectations on people who are perhaps even playing in the same side?
It can be difficult at times, because, as you say, you will get people like that. And we've been in situations over the last few years where we've had some people who are very keen to learn, and opportunities, as Gareth said, there are provided for them, and they'll take every opportunity that comes along. So if that means training two or even three times a week at a club level, then some players in the side have been willing to do that. And that's not just apparent in the first 11 where we are, but it also happens down in the second team, the third team, the fourth team, the ladies team. You get lots of people who are really willing to learn, and it doesn't mean that they're going to be professional cricketers, but what they want to do is they want to be a little bit better than they are at the moment. And that's great to have people with that mentality in the side. Similarly, we've had to have players who play alongside them who are very much at the other end of the scale, where their ambition to improve isn't quite the same. And that doesn't necessarily mean that their ambition to play at the same level isn't the same, because it may be that they're a player of a higher ability level, and they maybe can play at a certain level without getting in 2-3 sessions a week. But I think what we try to do as a club is just communicate as much as we can, and make sure we've got clear goals that are shared as a group. I think over the last couple of years, if we feel that people haven't been maximising their ability or pushing towards the team goal, then we've encouraged them to take on the extra responsibility of, or the extra opportunities that have come along with training. But ultimately, as we've improved and as we've moved up to the top level of amateur cricket as it is, it's been quite clear that the ones that have struggled have been the ones that haven't taken on the opportunities, to be honest, and the ones that haven't put in the extra effort, and the ones that have put in that commitment have done very, very well. So it's been a case of trying to shape a group of people who are like-minded in their ambition and like-minded in their commitment, and that doesn't always mean that they're going to do three gym sessions a week and three training sessions a week, and they're going to analyse every single performance, and they're going to turn up 4 hours before the game. It doesn't have to work in that way, but they're committed to what we want to achieve as a group. And that means preparing themselves in the way that will get them to a level that benefits the team. And sometimes players end up dropping down a team, or sometimes other players end up moving up a team. But ultimately, if we can have a shared goal within each individual team, and also as a club overall, which we did last year, and unfortunately we ticked every single box this season with four promotions and a first team staying up in the Premier League, you've got to sneak in a bit of success if you can. If you can set those goals, and everyone knows where they fit into the environment you're trying to create, and they fit into the plan, then everyone can be very open about the successes and failures they have, and the effort they put in. I think if goals are hidden, or if people aren't aware of what their job is supposed to be, and aren't aware of what the expectations of them are, then you're in a different boat, and it becomes quite an awkward situation. But I just think being as open and honest about what a club wants to achieve and what individuals themselves want to commit is the starting point.
Well, I think that's the crucial bit, isn't it? It's about the role. So if we give an example of somebody, there might be somebody who's played a lot of first-team cricket at any given cricket club who doesn't necessarily want to keep committing to that three times a week and the hard work. And they, you know, it may be a good opportunity to then sell them the role of going to play in the second team or third team with very much a different role of bringing on other players and using their experience around those other players. So I've had a lot of experience of managing people's individual role expectation to get the best out of them, but also to make them feel that they're still actually actively contributing, even though their physical effort might not be as much as it had been, you know, 5 or 10 years ago when they were up for it. And playing in the first team. So my first example would have been my dad, who was still good enough to play in the first team, but ended up going in the third 11 to help the youngsters come through. And that sort of set a bit of a precedence. And then a number of the other first team players that were coming to the end of their career would take on that same role. It gave them a different sense of importance and a different sense of doing something good for the club, but it very much kept them engaged within the overall ethos of the club, even though they weren't necessarily going to be training three times a week and doing all the things that the first team were doing. And that's where that individual point of difference comes in and is vital when you're looking to retain people within club and school cricket.
I think that still gives them a direct link to the first team as well. I think someone who's played maybe 15 years of first team cricket, Their job is to go down there and support those younger players, and they aren't playing a direct role in producing first team cricketers. And there may not be a coach, but there may be a leader on the pitch, and they may be able to advise players and assist young players as they go. And that's a really important part of club cricket, is developing your own players from within. And yes, that can happen through your junior structure and your junior coaching program, but you also need players in those second, third, fourth team who are going to help that young cricketer move up a side and score 50s and 100s and take wickets. So it plays a direct role in the team that they've spent the last 15 years in, even though they're not there.
Leader is the word that I picked out there for you. Someone who is strong enough to be able to guide a side or even a whole club and still make people think like it's the way that they've gone themselves. And that's about understanding the way that people tick and fitting in the things that you want to achieve in with the things that they want to achieve until it all comes together in a culture. And that's what good leadership's about, really.
Absolutely. And that is what happens at good clubs. And, you know, I'm sure that that's happened at Sam's club. That's had a huge amount of success. And certainly the clubs that I've been associated with over the years, that's been there, had nothing to do with me. It's been there forever and a day. And of course, once you set that culture that, yeah, we work hard and we want to do well in our sides, but also there's a pathway for people when they aren't able to commit that much time, then you retain the players and you retain that experience, and that experience gets passed on to the younger players at a far, far more rapid rate. And that's why, you know, without blowing too much smoke up Sam's club, which is Burridge, and my old club, which is Ventnor, why they're able to do the things that they're able to do now.
All right, let's wrap up this section with the yes no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that the panel want to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question, the greatest leaps in sport come from trial and error.
Yes.
No.
Second question, words trump numbers.
Yes.
No.
Okay, let us answer a couple of questions. That's what we do every week at this point in the show. And the way that we do that is we ask people to send their questions in. The best question of the week, as well as getting answered, also wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your question in to us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And that's what Cool Winder has done exactly this week. And what he says is, what matters more for fast bowlers? Flexibility, rhythm, or power and strength?
Well, it's a really interesting question, that, because power and strength is significantly important now, and a lot of our chats on here are around power and strength, and certainly in our development of a fast bowler here at school, it does play a significant part. But not having been a fast bowler that's done all of that sort of stuff on a regular basis, the thing that comes up a lot when I talk to bowlers is rhythm. The challenge with rhythm is that it's individual to each person, and there isn't always a key to unlock what provides you with that sensation that is rhythm. So to me, the question that has been asked is a fantastic one, but equally, I'm also looking at it and thinking, is there something else which is more important? And I'm very basic when it comes to fast bowling coaching, and my first thing would be the most important thing is that you don't injure yourself. So my first thing would be, are you safe? Because if you are safe, then often it means that you're putting things in a place that do give you a framework that you can work off of, that you can apply the forces to then generate pace. So to me, that is the starting point rather than going towards rhythm. Rhythm to me is a byproduct more so than something that you can actually work on specifically. Because sometimes you can get your run-up absolutely spot on and all of those things and still not quite feel that the ball's coming out as it does when you're at your absolute best. So rhythm to me is more of a byproduct. I think strength and conditioning is absolutely crucial, but my starting point to it would be my action being safe. And if it's safe, then I'm likely to be able to put some forces down into the ground and receive them back up through my body, which allows me to get the ball to go down the end at a rate or not.
You've carefully dodged your way around that question by not saying which one is more important.
Yeah, well, I don't think you can. And rhythm to me isn't more important. It's a byproduct. And people have got 5 wickets in Test match cricket without feeling that they're at the top of their rhythm. People have felt in great rhythm and got noughts. It's something that happens and it's a sensation. It's not something that's very easy to control. And if it is something that's very easy to control, then a lot of fast bowlers have kept that a secret so nobody else can find out about it over the years.
I am going to try and answer the question directly. I think what you've said there, Gareth, is that you can't really answer the question directly. It's impossible. But I'm going to try and answer the question directly. And by saying that, I'm going to say power and strength. And the reason for that is that that is the foundation that everything else is built upon. Now, I would probably agree with you, actually, Gareth, that you probably can't pick out. And if you try and do any one, then you're not going to be able to get away with it. But if you have to pick one, I would say start with power and strength, because certainly from a strength point of view, if you're strong, you can build up the other things on top of strength. If you've got excellent flexibility, but you've got no strength, you're not going to be that much of a fast bowler. And if you've got good rhythm, and you haven't got much strength, you're not going to be that much of a fast bowler. If you've got good strength, then you can build up those other two things. So I would say, if you're going to have to force me to answer that question, I'd say start with power and strength and build from there.
Yeah, and I wouldn't agree with that if we could add it a bit to the question. The question for me is that you can have all the power and strength in the world. And there was a classic example that they tried to do through the IPL a number of years ago, where they got this guy who was an immense athlete and who could bowl quite quickly, not necessarily anywhere near where he was meant to be able to do it. And they called him the fastest bowler that's ever lit. Well, actually, when he clocked him, he wasn't the fastest bowler because he couldn't apply his immense power and strength. So if the question was flexibility, rhythm, or the application of power and strength, I'm all over that as an answer. It's only one of those, and it's the last bit of it. But I've also seen people get really, really strong, really, really powerful, and yet haven't been able to technically apply that. So I go back again to my one, which is, am I safe? Because if I'm safe, and there's a good chance that I've got the foundation to be able to apply power and strength, then I can develop the power and strength rather than it being... So I've answered the question differently, but application of power and strength is the most crucial thing for me.
Yeah, but you can't build strength on dysfunction. You're absolutely right there. If you try and build strength on a poor technique, then you're going to end up in trouble.
Because we do see that, you know, and we see that at county level, because all of the fast bowlers, or a vast majority playing county cricket now, are significantly more powerful and stronger than the predecessors that played in my era, for example. But there isn't a direct correlation to that and the ability to project this ball down the other end at a faster rate. Now, there's lots of things that come into play on that, including workloads and all of that sort of thing. But in this age, if everything was down to power and strength, then we'd be bowling faster now than we ever have done. And the fact is that we're not.
Mm.
And so it's obviously down to that application and the playing demands and all of those things that are now growing, because the game has grown as a world entity. But to me, having that framework to then apply power and strength to is really good, because if I've got an 11-year-old, we're not going to have done a massive amount of power and strength for him, but if he's got a good framework and foundation, we can teach him that, and we can put that stuff into him. So I've reworded the question, but I think for good reason, because our aim here is to educate people who are listening to the show, and I think all three of those are valid. One is a byproduct, one is really important at a specific time of people's lives, but ultimately it's about that application and that safety to start off with. That's got to be the starting point for me.
Yeah, you don't want to think of it as a zero-sum game, do you? You want to do everything as well as you can do it. And when you consider that, when you're at the centre of a wheel with spokes coming out, and each one of those spokes is another one of those factors, you want as many of those spokes to be correct length, don't you?
You do, but I'll go back to it. How many kids are we working with? I mean, your stories from when you coach at clubs, they're going to be 11 downwards, a lot of them. And many of them have got bowling actions, and I could bowl in a straight line relatively from the age of about 7. Well, I didn't have any strength and conditioning around me at that point. But what I do know is, if I came into this era now, and if I happened to be a foot and a half taller, which would have been useful, I would train in the way that we now know, and I'd probably end up being relatively quick. But I had that foundation, and I bowl now with very much a similar action to the one that I had when I was 7 years old, and I can do it as long as, you know, a 41-year-old's body can do it. But it goes down in a straight line, and so I had the framework that if we'd have had the knowledge back then that we have now, and I had been a foot and a half taller, which would have been useful, then I'd have probably been able to get the ball down the other end at a rapid rate or not. So, and did I hit rhythm every time I bowled? Absolutely not. Does anybody know? Was I flexible? No more so than the next person, I shouldn't have thought. But I had the ability to apply whatever was required in the right direction. And I think that's the most important thing. So I like the fact you try to answer it. I don't think it's a question that can be answered in its present context, but if we added a little bit to it, it could be a very, very good question.
Yeah, and I guess to extend that, you need to ask yourself what order do you want to do those things in? And that's probably a more of an interesting kind of question, rather than which one's the most important. Which one is the most important for the next day, the next week, the next month, the next year? That might be a more of an interesting way of looking
at it. Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Let's move on to the next question, though. And it's from Saeed. And Saeed says, how can we do legal spin bowling with a 15-degree elbow flex? That's a question that's been in the news recently. What with the ICC... clamping down on bowlers who are allegedly going over that 15 degree. So you've got a young lad, he's a bit of a mystery spinner, but he's a bit worried he's chucking it. How does he stay legal?
Well, we're in a new world now as a result of the decisions of a couple of weeks ago, because we had very grey areas around the subject, and generally the top bowlers weren't being impacted. So we know that there's been a number of bowlers over the years that have had question marks, yet Ajmal's the first one to have actually have been pinged for it and been stopped and have to go through that process. So if they're going to be consistent from now on, I think they've set the benchmark and they've got an opportunity to be consistent, and that will have a knock-on effect to every level of the game, which is a strong international management. So how can we do legal spin bowling with a 15 degree elbow flex? 2 weeks ago would be a different answer to now. My answer 2 weeks ago, and it would sound flippant, that if you've got a 15 degree elbow flex and you didn't want to arouse suspicion and be legal, in inverted commas, you didn't need to spin it very much, because if you started to spin it very much, people would ask questions, and then there would be all this is he, isn't he stuff flying around. I think now we've got to straighten people up. I think we've got to take away that grey area, because now if you've got a grey area over you as a bowling action, and the ICC are consistent with the way that they manage this going forward, then we've got to do whatever we can to try and straighten that person's bowling arm up to enable them to get the most out of their cricket. End of story.
15 degrees is quite a small thing.
Yeah.
How easy is it to see that with the naked eye?
It's nigh on impossible. And my argument has always been, whenever I've been on the side of cricket grounds, oh, he's chucking it and he's that and the other, is that when I work with biomechanists and some of the guys that would have been involved in the final process recently with Ajmal, they talk about you can only really tell if you've got 8 cameras at appropriate angles recording at certain frame rates. So when I hear umpires and what have you doing it, and this again is pre this last decision that we've had, I would always go, you can't tell. Okay, because I can't tell, and I've worked with these blokes. So my view back then was, well, we let people go until you get the opportunity to stick 8 cameras around them, have the right people around them, put them in a laboratory and all of those sort of things. So you let them go. But now it's a slightly different game because they've got somebody and they've stopped them bowling who's one of the world's best. And that's going to have a knock-on effect. And I think now I'd be interested in what the ICC is telling the governing bodies around the world about the way that they should manage it from their first-class level all the way down to our grassroots. And what probably should happen is that each county should have a testing mechanism. Now, maybe not with the high-polluted cameras and laboratories that the ICC have got access to at Brisbane or in other places around the world, but to have a really basic one that gives us an idea. So if somebody does get called in a match, or even if there is a suspicion, I think we've got the job as a sport to be able to look after that person and say, actually, you're fine, and here's the proof that you're fine, or this is not fine, and therefore you need to go on this remedial program so you can enjoy your cricket. Because the last thing we want is people having a question mark, people on the side of the pitch saying, is he, isn't he, and all of that sort of thing. I think each bowler doesn't want to be illegal, doesn't want to have those questions about them, and we've got a job to either clear them or to help them through. And so I'm fascinated in the next stage for cricket, because the governing bodies around the world have got to then look at their constituent states, county districts, and put those things in place. Otherwise, you know, we're going to unearth all sorts of problems. I think it's great management from the ICC. It's about time that it was cleared up. I obviously feel for Ajmal, and I'm really pleased that he's getting the support back in Pakistan that we've been reading about this week, because everybody needs that, because nobody wants to be in a position where they can't play the game that they love so much. So, yeah, what do you do? I'd straighten them out now. Whereas a few weeks ago, I'd have said, well, just keep doing it, because it's such a great area.
Yeah, and in you having to rely on your own judgment of whether, until you can get to the point where the biomechanics guys come in, which is at such a higher level. Yeah, so the advice for someone who's a bowler, certainly, who's bowling in a certain way, is don't worry about the 15 degrees so much. Try and bowl with a straight arm.
I think we have to go there now. Yeah. That's my personal view, and I'm more than happy to be shouted down about it. But if there's an area of grey, it's going to be an uncomfortable place for that bowler to be in now. And the last thing we want is anybody having question marks over their participation in the game.
Yeah, that is a problem. And of course, at the very beginner level, it's very easy to see that. But the further along the line they come, the harder it is to pick those things out. Do you have any thoughts on how a coach who hasn't got access to the kind of testing that would know, but is coaching at a level where it's starting to become important, they could go?
Yeah, well, this is where I suppose my proposition of each county having a place that you can go to have this done, whether it be, you know, you might have your centre where the age group squads practice, for example, have 4 cameras, get the specialists from Brisbane to best advise how, so there's a protocol that you follow.
Yeah.
So anybody that even gets a bit of a question mark about them can then go, either, as I said before, to get cleared, to give them the confidence to keep doing what they're doing because it's actually been ratified and it can be proven and evidence that they're going the right way.
Not quite as rigorous, but enough to keep going. Yeah.
So it stops umpires from looking and all of those things because, you know, the county board or the organisation can go, we've had a look at him, we've put him through the protocol that the ICC has recommended, and we have cleared him. Or you have somebody who actually goes to that and finds that they're on the wrong side of it and they are chucking it, then all of a sudden it's a case of, right, in order to now get yourself bowling and to be legal and to be safe and not having to have anybody looking at your action, you need to go through this process, and it's going to need management. But I want every county or every district or every state to have something, and it won't be particularly expensive, but to have a basic system in place with maybe one person as a designated guy that gets trained up nationally to be able to do that, and away we go. And it's something I've been calling for a lot anyway, because this day was always going to come where they were going to ping somebody at the top of the game. But it's then what systems do you put underneath it in order to make that a worldwide thing, because if you don't, then it's going to end up being unfair on some people, and people are going to get penalised when they're not, and vice versa, and that's not a good position for our game to be in.
I think what we're saying at lower levels for young players or coaches working at grassroots level, the solution is quite a simple one, isn't it? You know, make sure as much as you can that arm is straight.
Yeah. That certainly would be my advice now.
Yeah. Okay, so I hope that helps. Okay, soapbox time, and that is 60 seconds of a rant or of a speech or some words that need to be said that can't be interrupted. And this week, it's Mark Garraway. I'm going to watch him in action this week. Over to you, Garris.
Well, I'm going to go this week with coach effectiveness and workload management. And I've been really lucky. I've been in professional cricket for a long time, and as a result of that, you can often manage your timetables and your workloads fairly well, so you're optimising your impact as a coach. And I know that a number of people that listen to this show are coaching in club cricket. They're doing their full-time jobs, they've got their families back at home, and still find that time to be able to add value to create clubs and cricketers all over the world. And I take my hat hugely off to all of those guys. But I think we also need to make sure that we're not doing too much coaching that all of a sudden our impact goes down. And that's something that I've certainly felt in the last few weeks, where we've got so many cricketers now here at school, and all of a sudden I look at my timetable, it's completely full. I'm not getting that opportunity to review. I'm not getting that opportunity to have those conversations, those coffee conversations that often are really important in any young cricketer's development, because I'm just coaching all the time. So my question here and my challenge to myself and everybody else is, sometimes coaching less can equal more impactful coaching.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. There are a couple of things that we just need to sort out before we go, a little bit of admin, and I know that Saeed and Kulwinder will be listening intently, because the first thing we need to do is decide on the winner of this week's competition, which is, of course, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Kulwinder's question was about what matters most for fast bowlers, and Saeed's question was more to do with chucking. Which one did you prefer, Garris?
Well, I'm going to go down, I suppose, a more topical one. I'm going to go with Saeed this week, just because, you know, it's all happened in the last couple of weeks. We're all trying to speculate on what happens next. And I thought that was a great question, and we came with a conclusion that we would encourage people to bowl with a straighter arm now, definitely, which was good. Colwinder's question was great because it got us on off topic a little bit and off the question a little bit, and I always like that. But Saeed's this week's winner.
Congratulations, Saeed. Pick yourself an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy and keep getting into those nets and playing those games and bowling people out with your mystery spin, making sure that arm is nice and straight. Now, Garris, there'll be people listening to this and they'll be thinking, do you know what? I want my question answered. I want to win that prize, the online coaching course prize. What the heck would I need to do to win that?
Well, one of the options is to give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also get us on Twitter. At Pitch Vision Acad is where we hang out there, and our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. So all the social media there, you can add to the noise about chucking if you want to, or any other conversation related to playing or coaching cricket, that's where you need to go. If you want to listen to the show every week, then we welcome you along to the audience. You can do that by going into your favourite podcatching program, be that Apple Podcasts or iTunes, Downcast, Overcast, Dogcatcher, anything like that. and you can find us in there by searching for Pitch Vision Academy. Or if you want to go old school, use the RSS feed, remember them, and go to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link for all the details on how to use the RSS feed. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Labours.